Today's Shir Masechet Baba Kama Daf Nun Tes. We will begin on Daf Nun Tes Amud Aleph, 10 lines from the bottom, top. In our previous Shir, the Gemara had analyzed how we assess when an animal eats some fruit, vegetables, grass, in somebody else's property, how we assess those damages. And the Gemara had indicated that we assess it not according necessarily to what it's currently worth, but we actually assess it, what it was potentially going to be worth. So begins the Gemara, Amar Bai, Rabbi Yosef Glili, Rishmol, Rabbi Yosef Glili, and Rishmol, Amru Deva Echad, have the same opinion. Rabbi Yosef Glili, Hadamaran, Rabbi Yosef Glili is what we learned. The Rabbi Yosef Glili said, we pay according to Masha Meshuyer, which meant the Gemara example was with some where the animal ate grass. And the Gemara said that the animal, by eating grass, was, we don't look at it if the grass had just started to grow and what was the value of the grass at that point, but we actually look at what the grass would have ultimately grown to. Rabbi Shmuel, what does Rabbi Shmuel say, similar concept to Tanya? The Braisa speaks about an animal who causes damage to somebody else's property. The Torah Kedusha says, "Meitav Sadeu, Meitav Karma Yishalem." Says the Gemara, "Meitav Sadeu Shal Nizik, Meitav Karma Shal Nizik." When we assess Meitav, we go according to the Nizik. Divrei Yishmal. Rabbi Kiva says, "Leba Kosev Ela Ligvus Nizikin Mina Ijitz." The Torah Kedusha is saying that whenever one is paying for damage incurred from property, the payment is paid from Ijitz. The Kava Chaimer, and certainly says the Gemara, in a situation of Hegdish, in a situation where it was Hegdish that was damaged, we have to pay with Ijis. And as we learned back with Av Zion, there was an opinion that said that when an animal does damage to Hegdish, A, it always pays Nezek Shalem, and B, besides that it always pays Nezek Shalem, but it also has to pay it from the Ijis. Says the Gemara, V'loy Tema, Rav Ida Bar Avin. Say, don't say, says the Gemara, the way Rav Ida Bar Avin explained. Domer Rav Ida Bar Avin, that the case is going, She'ochla Ruga Ben Arugas, where the animal ate one of the rows of vegetables or produce that were growing. V'loy Yedinan, and we're not quite certain what was the quality of what was eaten. If it was a poor quality, or was it a better quality, dumber that we could tell the mazik, kum shalem, kum pay shmeina, pay accordingly to the best, we don't know the value, look at the best row in this field, and assume that was the same as the quality of the row that was eaten up. We don't say that. My tama. Why is that not correct? Because there's a rule throughout Shas. So if the Nizik is saying that since we don't know what was the quality of was we don't know what was the quality of what was eaten, we have no right to say that it must, we have no right to say that it must have been the Shmeina. It must have been the best quality. Because that is contrary to the concept of Hamotzi Mechaveroi Olav Araya. So, of course, the Mefarshim ask, Hamotzi Mechaveroi Olav Araya, as we've learned in our Masechta and other Masechtas as well, is a fundamental principle in Shas. So, how could anybody suggest different than the concept of Hamotzi Mechaveroi Olav Araya? So I saw that there are a number of answers given to that question. The Melei Aroyim and Gedulei Shmuel explain that we're dealing here with a field that has many rows, and most of the rows are quality rows, and there are some rows that are not. So maybe we should say that we're going Basaroy, we're following the majority, and most of the field is high quality. The Meraim Yisada has a different approach. He says that logic indicates that if the animal is going to eat, it's going to choose to eat from the best row. So if we can't know for sure which row it ate, we need to assume that it ate from the Shemena. Rather, Ella says, what does Rabbi Shmuel mean to say? When we look at Meitav, we don't look at the quality of what was eaten, what is value of what was eaten as it is currently, or my new, what was meant, keich the salik, as much as it will be when it ultimately grows. The Or Sameach points out, as we discussed in previous shurim, that this is halacha strictly when we're speaking about nezikin. When we speak about nezikin, there's halacha of meitab. We just learned the pasuk, and included in that limud of meitav is that we don't just look at what it's currently worth. We look at what it was potentially going to be worth. He said, but in other situations, he says we've learned that mishalemis mashenenis, you pay for what you benefited, for what it ate. When you're paying because of mishalemis mashenenis, it's an entirely different concept. It's a concept of balchoiv. I owe you because my animal benefited from you. That's a balchoiv. There is no din of meitav. There you pay from the beninus. And there also, we don't have this halacha that we look at what it would have been worth later in the season. Amamar. We learned in our previous year that if the animal ate grapes that are small, unripened grapes, so Yeshua says we look at those grapes when they're going to be ripe, and Chum say we look at the property, how much is it worth with those grapes and how much it's worth without those grapes, and that's the amount you have to pay. It says the Gemara, Rav Shim ben Yehuda, Rav Shim ben Shimon, b'medvar mamurim, when is that said that we evaluate how much the property is worth with the grapes, how much the property is worth minus the grape? Says the Gemara, in a case, she'ochle lulev gefon of yichurei denoim, when they clusters of grapes that are not ripened, clusters of grapes that aren't ripened, or dates that are not ripened, or smother, it seems that if it was grapes as they're just budding, roin kila novim oim des lebatzer, there halacha would be, we look at how they would look at the time that they were ripened. But ask the Gemara, Amos Sefer, let's learn that Brisa, Ochla Pagam Abaisar. So that's when we look as if they were full grapes. So the Diak is, who the Rhinos say? That's when we look at what it would ultimately be worth. Kilo Amnanovus Labatsar, Hos Smother, when it's smother, which is even an earlier stage than Pagam Abaisim, we don't look at the future. So we have a stira. What is the halacha by smother? When the animal ate grapes that are so small, they just began to bud, do we look at the value that they're going to ultimately have? Or do we look at the value of what the field is worth with them and without them? Says the Gemara, because there's a stira in what the Braisa says is the halacha. Answers the Gemara, Amar Ravina Kroich Vatani. We have to really learn the Braisa this way. When the grapes are ripened, you look at the value of the grape. But if the grapes are not ripened, we look at them at what their ultimate value will be. Says the Gemara, if that's the case, that by smother and by all other grapes that aren't ready, that's the formula. So ask the Gemara, if that's the case, Rav Shim ben Yehuda and Rav Yeshua, they both are saying that the same concept, that we look at what they're ultimately worth. And from the Brisa, it seems, the Brisa that we learned in our previous year, at the end of this year, it seems that Rav Shim ben Yehuda and Rav Yeshua are disagreeing. And it says the Gemara, there is a machlokes. Ika benayu chash gufna. When the grapes, if the grapes would not have been eaten and they would have been left on the vine, even then, though certainly the grapes would become much more worthwhile, much more valuable when they're completely ripened, but the value of the grape vine goes down. Because as the grapes grow on that grapevine, they take out the nutrition from that vine. And the question here is that also taken into consideration? And we say that yes, we're not looking at the grapes, how they're worth now in their unripened state. We'd rather look at the grapes, how they will look when they're ripened. But should we deduct that if the grapes being taken off the tree by being eaten by the tree gave us more value in this grapevine? The Lema Saimi, but says the Gemara, we're not quite sure. We have this machloikus, so he says that, so the Gemara is saying, that is the subject of the machloikus of Rav Shimon ben Yehuda and Rav Yeshua, but we just don't know who holds what. And Tosfos Divrei HaMashkil Ikka points out that even though normally we say that the second Tana is the more machmer than the first Tana, and therefore the simple way of learning is that the first Tana says we do take off the savings in that the grapevine wasn't lost its value, went down so much in value. Here, it's not quite certain who's the machmer and who's the makel. Abaye Amar, but Abaye says, Mesaimi. We can certainly know who holds what. Because says Abaye, Man Tana de Chayesh Gufna. Who's the Tana throughout Shas that takes that issue about the grapevine's value into consideration? Says Abaye, it's Rav Shimon ben Yehudahi, the Tanya. The Brisa speaks about somebody who violated a Nara. Rav Shimon ben Yehuda, I'm Rav Shimon, Rav Shimon ben Asya. Oinus, when we speak about the person who did this, Einam Shalom as a Tsar, there's no Tsar payment. Because, he says, Nesha Soifel et Tsar Tachas Bala, the girl ultimately would have gotten married and she would have had her relations as a psula with her husband, so she would have experienced that tsar anyway. Amrloi, so they said to him, even though there is pain involved in the first act of bia, but ain't a diamond nevelis baratzin to a woman that did it willingly, le nevelis ba'inis, versus a woman who was violated. So what do we see from here? That when we make a calculation about damages, we also look at the entire picture. And therefore, we also look into the picture, we look here into the picture of what was saved in the grapevine not losing its so much value. It says the Amar Abaye, Hani Tanoi, the Tanoim that we're about to learn their opinion, Rav Shimon ben Yehuda, Rav Shimon ben Yehuda, whose opinion we just studied, all Amar Davecher, all are the same opinion. And explains the Gemara. Rav Shimon ben Yehuda had Amaran, that we take into consideration that this girl would have ultimately had the pain of having a first bia. Hani Tanoi Mahi, who are the other Tanoim that you were referring to? Says Mar Tanya, the Brisa speaks about a woman who had a miscarriage. And as we've learned so many times at Amasechta, that you pay the Demei Velodus, however we make that evaluation, to the husband. Rabbi Yosef says, but we also need to take off the dock, Nechi Chaya, like if the wife would have come to full term, and she, Baruch Hashem, she would have had to have a midwife. That costs money. Now that she unfortunately is not going to come to that, the children were miscarried, so that is a savings. Benazar Eimer, Nechi Mezoinis, that a woman, she is pregnant, you have to give her more to eat, particularly during the days that she's having labor. And that too, Rashi says, has to be taken off consideration. So one is that she eats more. One pshat is that she eats better, healthier food, which are more expensive. Some Rishonim say that what's meant here is that had the child been born, you would have to support the child and feed that child. And now that will not be part of your expenses, because unfortunately this child miscarried, so you're saving all of that money. And that also should take into consideration. And the Rashba says that pshat, And not only does the Rashba say that pshat, but he says, so for how long do we consider that? How long will we consider that you would have food expense for this child? And the Rashba says that the obligation of a father to support his child is until the child is 6 years old. So we have to take into calculation, into consideration, how much food would cost to feed this child had he been born until he was 6 years old. Says the Gemara, Mandam and Nakichaya, the Mandam that says that we take off the value of the midwife, how much she would cost, Koshkein, Naki Mezoinus. Certainly, we would take off the value of the Mezoinus. Mandam and Naki Mezoinus, that we deduct the value of the Mezoinus, of Nakichaya Loi. We don't deduct what a midwife would have cost. The Amalei, because the husband could always say to the Mazik, Itzitzi Didi Pekichahi, my wife is a very capable woman, and she would have been able to have the baby without a midwife. So you didn't save me, you did not save me any money that I won't have to pay for a midwife. I wouldn't have had to pay for a midwife anyway. My wife can manage to have children without that. The Papa of Hunabre, the Shuam of Uvda, they had a question, Kavaseder of Nachman, Bishishim, that they looked at the field, and we looked at as a field that's 60 times the size of what actually was damaged, and what did it go down in value because of the damage that took place. Lishnachrina, a different version, Rapapa of Hunabre de Yeshua, Sama Dikla, there was a palm tree that was damaged, Avga Kitne de Ara, not with a field that was 60 times its size, with the area around the field. V'hilchasak of a seder, Rapapa of Hunabre Yeshua, Dikla de Ramo, that we have a Dekel or more by that type of a field, by that type of a tree, we look at the entire 60 times. Dikla Parsaw. A Dikla Parsaw is a very significant type of a tree, and therefore we look at the tree at it on its own, not as part of a larger field. Says the Gemara. Eliezer Zeira. There was an individual whose name was Eliezer Zeira. Hamasayim Masani Uchma was wearing black shoes. The Kai B'Shuka the Nador, and that's how he's walking in the streets of Nador. Eshechinhunu the Bei Resh Galusa. So the people of the Resh Galusa's family met him. Vamalei Maishna Masani. Why are you wearing black shoes? Amalhu. So he said, Kame Ibla Yerushalayim. I'm being misablam in Avelos of Yerushalayim. And the way the Rishonim explained what's so significant about black shoes. So apparently, everybody used to wear black shoes, but they wore white shoelaces. He was wearing, not only were the shoes black, but even the shoelaces were black. That's one pshat. Another pshat that some Rishonim suggest is that they used to wear shiny black shoes. The black shoes that he was wearing were not shiny. So he said, I'm wearing these shoes because I'm being misabel in Yerushalayim. Amru, so they said to him, At chshivas l'lubei Yerushalayim, are you so important that you should act in such a way? Sava yurava, they thought that he was acting in an arrogant fashion. So Mefarshim asks, why specifically, when he wants to show Avelus on Yerushalayim, is it shown with the shoes? So the Gra explains, the Pasuk says in Shir HaShirim, Mayofu Pamayich bin Olam, and the Gemara Masechta Giga says that Pasuk refers to the Oilei Regalim. So the shoes were the place where it was evident that the Churban HaBayis. Another pshat that I saw is the Pasuk says, HaShemayim Kisi V'Eretz Doim Ragli, that the feet are where HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shechina is, which represents the Beis HaMikdash. So why is it that only people who are important, as the Gemara is saying, who have the right to be Mis'abim Yerushalayim, doesn't everybody have to mourn on the Churban of Yerushalayim? So Rinyan Yaakov says that the Pasuk says in Kehelis, Yosef Das, Yosef Makov. The more intelligent you are, the more you're able to feel the pain. And therefore he was saying, I'm important enough that I feel the pain of Yerushalayim. So to which he said, Amlahu Gavra Rabbana, that I am indeed a great person. So of course many Mefarshim ask that the Gemara in Masechet Nedarim says that Rav Tarfon was once in a place of danger, and the way he was able to get out was by saying that I'm a Talmud Chacham, and that's why they let him go. And then he regretted that he did so. So why over here is he allowed to do so? So the Mashal explains that Rav Tarfon was upset that he used this excuse, because Rav Tarfon, explains the Mashal, was a very wealthy man. So since he was a very wealthy man, he could have said he shouldn't have said it. He should have just paid his way out. Eliezer Ze'ira wasn't a wealthy man, so he didn't have this option of paying his way out. And that's why, because he had no other choice, he said, I'm allowed to say what I said because Gavra Rabbana. Another pshat that I saw from the Bnei Yisoschar, he says that when he said this, he did this because he said it because of Kavod Yerushalayim. What he saw was that they were living in a time and a place that people weren't showing the proper Kavod to Yerushalayim. They weren't showing the respect that we should be feeling for the Churban Abayis. In such a case, he's saying that I, even though I'm a Gavra Rabba, have to go out of my way to show the Avelis the morning of Yerushalayim. That was acceptable. Based on this Gemara, the Marie Bruna objected that there used to be people who used to wear their talis cotton out on top of their shirts. He says, since in his day, only Talmid Chachamim wore their talis cotton in such a manner, anyone else wearing the talis cotton in such a manner is considered a Yerura. And in fact, he says that everybody should always be considering when they're doing something, is it appropriate according to who I am that I should be acting this way or not? The Stei Chemed disagrees. And the Stei Chemed says that it matters that there are many other considerations. He says, when you're living amongst non-Jews, so there may be these consideration, the one level consideration. When you're living amongst Jews, it matters what the minhag hamakom is. There are many considerations before we just say doing something is considered a yuhura. The Chassam Sofer says that the two ways had to be mis'abel and Yerushalayim. One way to be mis'abel and Yerushalayim is by building and hoping for Mashiach Tzidkenu. Another way is by having children, bringing up children who are Talmid Chachamim. And that's what they felt was Eliezer's mistake. Eliezer was focused on the outward Avelis. What he should have been focused on was thinking about more positive, constructive ways of being showing Avelis on Yerushalayim. There's an interesting question that Rav Moshe Zatzal in the Shalos Tshuvos Igros Moshe, Or HaChaim Chelek Gimel, Simen Pei Vav, discusses. He says that the halacha is the Shulchan Aruch and Or HaChaim Simen Tuf Kav Samach Aleph Sif Aleph Paskins, or Mishayer, everybody when he builds a home has to leave a place, a Mishayer, Amal Amma, Keneged HaPesach. He leaves a place that's an Amma by an Amma, Loisid, not to be painted. Zecha L'Churban. So Rav Moshe discusses if not leaving it unpainted, but just painting it black would be a satisfactory manner of fulfilling this halacha. And Rav Moshe says that it very much may be a acceptable way of fulfilling this halacha, because Rav Moshe says that what we're learning in our Gemara is that the color black represents Churban Habayis. And since the color black represents Churban Habayis, says Rav Moshe, if you just take the black and color it that way, that's how you're going to show that's how you're showing Churban Habayis. The Mefarshim, in the Klozim Gereba, in discussing this Gemara, is when we speak about the Churban Habayis, what is mourning over the Churban Habayis represent? So he says that the Churban Habayis represents that you recognize the loss that we have in Yerushalayim. In other words, he says that just being upset that Klal Yisrael doesn't have the independence that we had is not enough of a reason to show Churban Yerushalayim. What we're supposed to show the Churban Habayis is that we lost the place where we were able to have a Beis Hamikdash, where we were able to do the Avodas Hashem. And because we were able to do the Churban, no longer able to do that, that's what we have to mourn over. And that's what was the debate about him being Gavri Rabba. A Gavri Rabba is only an individual who's able to show that he truly understands what does the Churban Habayis mean. But if he's not able to truly understand what the Churban Habayis means, so then the Gemara says, Savar, that seems to be Yura. And that's why the Klaus Magareba says that there are people that the Shulchan Aruch discusses the halacha of saying Tikkah Chatzos, yet many people don't say Tikkah Chatzos. Why don't they say Tikkah Chatzos? So he says it's very much dependent, connected to what we've been learning in our Gemara. He says, our Gemara is teaching us that you only could be Mis'abel in Yerushalayim if you are truly a person that recognizes the Churban Habayis. That was the consideration by Eliezer Zeira. Are you really understanding what the Churban Habayis is? Therefore, somebody just sits down and says Tikkah Chatzos, but really doesn't understand what the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash Yerushalayim is, shouldn't be doing so. The Sefer Chassidim in Siman Tezvav says that our Gemara is again a demonstration of how a person has to act in a humble and modest fashion. That when a person comes and he's speaking, he shouldn't show off, I asked this great question, I said this great teretz. Even if a person was able to say a great vatara, a great question or teretz, he should keep it quiet. And the Pelayoyitz and Erech Yura says, Shloyas called a kol davach sidus. Anything that a person does because he's showing and he's trying to do what's right, loyasa b'fresya. He shouldn't do it publicly. Only somebody who has a great reputation and is well known who he is, that he knows, everybody recognizes his stature. Nobody's going to wonder, how are you doing this, acting this way? If that is not your situation, it's better not to do it. And if you're going to do something, the lo yasa dover chesidus el betzina, only do it privately. The lo yishana befaresim aminagadina, publicly don't be different than anyone else. And he uses our Gemara as a raya, as of course as important it is. And we know the halacha of kolams abu b'yushlayim, that whoever mourns b'yushlayim zoych v'roy b'simchasoy will ultimately see in the rebuilding of Yerushalayim, but it always has to be done in a way of modesty and humble. So he said, I'm Gavri Rabba. I'm a great person and I may do this. Says the Gemara, Amar Leih, so they said, Menayadinan, From where should we know that you're a Gavra Rabba? Amalei, so he said to them, I atem by me noy milsa. Either you could ask me a question, or anoy by me noy milsa, or I'll ask you a question. Amalei, so they said to him, by at, you ask. Amalei, hi man that cuts kufra, somebody who's cutting dates that are not yet ripened. My mishalim, when we speak about the damages, amalei, mishalim de dufra, we pay the value of unripened dates. But he asked them, v'ava tamri, ultimately they're going to ripen. So he said, you know what? Right. Amalei mishalim de tamri. We look at them, what their ultimate value will be. Amalei tamri shakmane, but he didn't eat dates. So he was back and forth. Do we look at what they're currently worth, or do we look at what they will ultimately be worth? Amalei emelon at. So they said to him, since we don't know, can you tell us what the halach is? Amalu b'shishin. We look at the property, and we look at the formula that we've been discussing. As this is a property 60 times what was eaten, and how much would this loss be? Amalei. So they asked the man Amakavaseich, who paskin like you? Amalei Hashmul Chayim based in a Kayim. Shmuel and his bezdin are in existence. Go ask him. Shadrei kamei de Shmuel. So they sent the question to Shmuel. Amalei Shapa Kamlechu, and he answered you correctly. Bishishim, that the formula is Bishishim, and since he paskined properly, they said. So they saw that he was indeed a great individual, Shafkua, and they let him alone, even though he was wearing shoes that they thought maybe weren't befitting that he should wear that type of shoe. Rishim and Aima, Achlam Peres Gemurim, if the fruit that was eaten was completely ripe, we look at the value of that fruit, and that's what has to be paid. My Tama, asked the Gemara, Hadam Rachmana, the Torah says, that's when the Torah speaks about the Mazik Hashem. Malam Shishan Magav Sada. Then we learn that the Torah teaching us means we don't look at the fruit itself, we look at it as part of the field. And says the Gemara, Hani Mili, when was that halacha said? The Midi the Tzarech L'Sada. By something that still needs to nourish from the earth. But Hani, when the fruit is already completely ripe, since they need no longer to nourish from the field, we look at their value, how they are now. And Tosfos says that this is the basis for the halacha, that anything that's ultimately going to be cut, even though it currently has not yet been cut, the halacha looks at it, as if it was already cut. And here too, even though this fruit is not yet cut off the tree, but it's in a status that it's ready to be cut off, the halacha views it that way. The Shach says that the raya Tosfos is saying is not really a compelling raya. The reason it's not a compelling raya, says Tosfos, is because here we're speaking about Hilchos Nezokim. So it could be, when we speak about Nezokim, that's the way we make the evaluation. But that doesn't necessarily mean that we make this evaluation in every area of halacha that way. Amar Rav Huna Bachiyo, Amar Rav Yermiya Ba'aba. Don Rav, Kremeya. There was a situation that came up like Rameya, Pasuk Chachso, but he passed like Rav Shimon. And the Gemara explains. Don Kremeya, the Rameya says in a Braisa, Kasa Florishin. If somebody wrote to somebody that he's selling a field that is mortgaged to his wife's ksuba, and the person who is buying the property is concerned that the wife to whom this field is mortgaged is not agreeable to the sale, and therefore he goes and asks and kanya kaslerishin v'loy chasmala, and she didn't sign that she gives up on the mortgage. And then the husband sold the property to Shani, to another man, for Chasma, and she did sign of the Ksubasa. Because if she didn't want to sign, so by the first deal, if she signed, she could say that the only reason I signed was Nachas Ruach Asis Labali. I wanted to make my husband happy. So how did I make my husband happy? I signed for it because that will make him happy, but I wasn't sincere in my signature. But in a case where she didn't sign by the first sale, but she did sign by the second sale, she loses that ability. Because if you didn't want to make your husband happy, and you're strong enough to say, no, I won't sign, then you shouldn't have signed by the second one. The fact that you signed by the second sale, and you didn't sign by the first sale, shows that where you're ready to sign, you sign. And when you're not ready to sign, you don't sign. And therefore, the second signature was considered a good signature, and a signature that is taken into halachic consideration. Divrei Meir. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Chayla Teish Omer, she always has the right to say, even when she didn't sign by the first sale, and only signed by the second sale, she could say, Yechayla Shetayim Nachas Ruach Asis Labali, Atem Malachem Malai. I only did it to make my husband happy. You have no right to have a complaint against me. Or Pelchsa, Pasach Hilchus Reb Shimon, and he Paschal Reb Shimon, Yad HaTanan, Reb Shimon Amar Erkel Peres Gemurim, Mishal Lemes Peres Gemurim, Imsa, some sayim. We look at the actual fruit. We look at the actual fruit. We don't look at anything else. There's a shaila that the Trumas Hadeshin speaks about, where two people came to with a din Torah that their father passed away, and there's some that the person came and said that these people's father had left the tzava, that part of his assets, part of his estate, should be left to them. And two people had such din Torahs. One came to terms, and the other one has now a din Torah. And he says that the fact, in other words, again, to get the story straight, there was a person who died, he left children, and then two people came and had claims that they deserved part of the estate that the father who had died left. And his children came to terms with one of them. Can the second one say that the fact that you came to terms with the first child, with the first person, is an indication that you recognize that our claim is a valid claim, and therefore you have to come to terms with me as well? So the Trumas Hadeshin says it isn't, because they could say, the first person we knew, we have a good relationship with, he's a person that we want to satisfy. But here, the second person is not that person, and therefore we're not ready to come to terms with you. So ask the Trumas Hadeshin, if that's a legitimate line of reasoning, so why do we say that the woman, just because she didn't sign with the first person, but she signed with the second person, is a raya that she can't say Nachas Ruach Asis Labali. She can maybe say to the first person, I didn't want to sign because he's a person that I don't have a relationship with. He's a person that I don't want to get involved with. The second person I have a relationship with, I'm not worried about so much, and therefore I was comfortable to sign. So, answers the Trumas Hadeshin, there's a fundamental difference between the case that he's speaking about and the case of our Gemara. In our Gemara, we're speaking about a woman and her ksuba. And when we speak about a woman and ksuba, then and signing for what the husband wants her to sign, so there's a legitimate concept in halacha that a wife wants to satisfy her husband. This concept of nachas ruach, asis labali, makes a lot of sense. And therefore, explains the Trumas Hadeshin, it's an acceptable concept in our Gemara. Whereas, says the Trumas Hadeshin, in the case of a tzava, there's no such concept of Nachas Ruach Asis Labali, and therefore the two cases cannot be compared. The Torah Deisha, when it speaks about Klal Yisrael bringing donations to the Mishkan, says, the Pasuk in Parashas Vayakel says, V'yovah ha-noshim al-noshim, kol nadiv lev haviyu hach v'nezin. And Rashi says, Al Anoshim, Im Anoshim Vesmuch Lahem. The husbands came to the with their wives. Why was necessarily for the husband to come with the wives. So the Panim Yofas explains that the husbands cannot give away their wives' jewelry without the wives' permission. On the other hand, the wives cannot give jewelry without the husband's permission. So that's why they came together. But as the Panim Iris, so now we understand why they both had to come, but the Panim Yofas. But the question is, why does the Pasuk say that the wives came before the husbands? The Yava Hanoshim Al Hanoshim. Why does the Pasuk say that the women came first? So the Ksav Seifer says, if it would have been in the reverse order, that the husbands came first, and only after the husbands came did the wives come, so then we would be concerned that the wives could say, we only gave it what we gave after our husbands came, and we agreed to what they gave because of Nachas Ruach Chassis Labali. We did what our husbands wanted us to do, but not that we really wanted to give it away. So the Torah says the wives came first. Since the wives came first, we can't say that their thinking was Nachas Ruach Chassis Labali. Who told you to come? And therefore, all we needed is that they should come, and then the husbands should show consent. And that's why the husband came second. The Pasuk says the Chassam Sofer, the Pasuk says, V'tan rocha v'leya, v'taman aloy, hayesh lanu chelik v'nachla v'beis avinu. And that's what Rachel and Leah responded to Yaakov when Yaakov wanted to leave the house of Lavan. And the Medrash says, Hoyel v'gdima Rachel aleya, since Rachel spoke before Leah, that's why she didn't get to be buried together with Yaakov in the Maris Machpelah. So, explains the Chassam Sofer. Rachel, as the Pasuk says, we find here that Rachel and Leah were the ones that were Meichel to Yaakov. Whatever you want is fine. So, on Leah, who spoke second, says the Chassam Sofer, Leah could say, well, I really didn't mean it. The only reason I said what I said was because Nachas Ruach Chassis Labali. I needed to make my husband happy. And if the first wife agreed, I had no choice but to agree as well. But on the other hand, Leah, Rachel, was the first one to speak up. She didn't have to say what she said. So Leah, who did more than she was supposed to do, therefore got a share of the Maris Machpelah. Leah, Rachel, was Meichel everything. Since she was Meichel, she was also Meichel Ashir in the Maris HaMachpelah. Says the Mishnah, HaMagdish, if somebody takes in his produce to make a stack out of it, he takes into somebody else's property, Shlei Rishus, without permission, and the animal of the owner of the field in which he made this stack ate up that produce, potter. He's not going, the owner doesn't have to pay for it. V'im, chusk behen, if that animal slipped on it, ba'gadosh chayiv. The person who made that stack is going to be chayiv. V'im higdish b'shus, but if he had permission to take it in, ba'asad chayiv, then the person who owns the property shall be held responsible. But explain the Rishonim. What happens if the animal of the owner of the field ate that produce that was brought in without permission? Then the owner of the animal will not be held responsible because, as we spoke previously in our perek, there's always a concept of what did your animal eat? My food. He didn't have to eat it. Says the Gemara, Lema Tana de Loik Rebbe. We learned on Daf Mem Zayin, a machloikus of Rebbe and the Chachamim. When I give somebody permission to bring something into my property, what is included in that permission? Does it mean I take full responsibility or not? Rabbanan say it means I take full responsibility. Rebbe says, I gave you permission to bring your things into my property, but I'm not taking responsibility. Says the Gemara, Lema Tana de Loik Rebbe. Our Mishnah seems not to be following the opinion of Rebbe. Rebbe Rebbe says that I'm not responsible until I take on that responsibility. Says Our Mishnah is speaking about a person who is not just taking people's stacks of tefuah, but they also is in charge of watching those tefuah. So when such a person says to someone, "Dichi omale, I have a gedosh, bring your tefuah into my property," it's understood that included in that statement is meant antava antalchahu, to bring it in and I will watch it. So when he takes on the responsibility of watching, there is no question that even Rebbe will agree that he takes on that responsibility. The Rosh says that even though our Gemara is going out of its way to be able to explain how this Mishnah could be following even the opinion of Rebbe, says the Rosh, that should not be taken as an indication necessarily that the Halacha is like Rebbe. But he says it's the derech of the Gemara to try to make that, to try to figure out how the Mishnah should follow everybody's opinion, even if it's not the opinion that is necessarily the halachically accepted opinion.